Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mary, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Living with Multiple Myeloma. And this has been a two-part series, and today is part two, and it's the title for today is Coping with the Stress of Caregiving When Your Loved One Has Multiple Myeloma. So this is a very important call, and it's really focusing on caregiving, and it's and really focusing on really the issues that really really can be very challenging to people who are both caregivers and people living with multiple myeloma as well. Today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you on the call today. We have over 758 participants on the call today, and you come from all over the United States. You come from all different regions and states in the United States, and we also have international participants from Argentina, Canada, China, Jamaica, Korea, Syria, Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you truly come from all over the world. It's a global audience, and it's really a credit to each of you that you're spending the next hour with us. Now, today's program was made possible by an educational grant from Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and I really want to thank them for their support of this entire series. I would like to take a moment and turn your attention to all those materials that you have received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about the topics our speakers are going to address, and there also is information about all the different collaborating organizations as resources for each of you to use going forward. In addition, there's an evaluation form, and I would ask you to all take a moment at the end of today's program and complete that evaluation form. Your feedback is really so critically important to us as we develop new programs going forth. Indeed, this particular topic for today's program was one that many of you recommended that we offer. So we try very hard to follow your advice and your suggestions to us. Also, I do want to also call your attention to a program that we have. It's called the Door-to-Door Program. It's a multiple myeloma transportation assistance program, and you all have information about that in your materials, and it's a program that you definitely would want to take advantage of. It allows for more generous grants for people who are having, you know, multiple visits with their physician and needing help with transportation. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Nupur Rajay. And Dr. Rajay is Associate Professor, Department of Medicine at the Harvard Medical School. She's Director, Center for Multiple Myeloma, Division of Hematology and Oncology, Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Rajay is actually a frequent presenter on our programs today, and it's a pleasure having her back today. And she's going to talk a bit about caring for your loved one with multiple myeloma, some of the specific care needs, the caregiver's role in decision-making, and the challenges of communicating with the healthcare team. I now turn this program over to Dr. Rajay.
Thank you, Carolyn. It is a pleasure to be here today, and honestly, I'm really looking forward to today's session because I'm going to learn just as much from it, with all the audience participation. As you've mentioned earlier, Carolyn, this is a two-part series, and we've talked about multiple myeloma. We've talked about the symptoms and all the advances in therapies for myeloma at our last session. Obviously, these exciting advances with novel therapies have changed the paradigm of myeloma therapies. These have, in fact, resulted in transformation of myeloma into a chronic disease. But with this exciting advance, obviously, the thing which is center stage is quality of life issues, and a big part it plays in our treatment decision making today. Not only is it important to care for the person with myeloma, but even more important it is to recognize and understand the needs of the caregivers and providing the right tools to the caregivers so that they can actively participate in providing the best possible care for their loved ones. Today, I will focus on some of these issues surrounding specifics to myeloma patient care, like symptom and pain management, and then address issues about communicating with your healthcare providers. A chronic condition like myeloma often requires intermittent medical interventions with periodic monitoring and supportive care to reduce the degree of symptoms and maximize daily functioning and improve quality of life. This can result in effects on your appearance, physical abilities, and independence. Patients experience fatigue, can experience pain, difficulty with sleeping. They may not be able to work, causing financial concerns. They may experience anxiety and stress related to clinic visits and the future as to what this disease will bring for them. Patients may experience anger about having a chronic illness and struggle to maintain control over life and their well-being. When thinking about symptoms for myeloma, bone pain and anemia remain the most common presenting features affecting more than 80% of patients. Other features may include symptoms related to increased calcium levels, kidney dysfunction, and infection. All of these symptoms will be corrected with the treatment of the underlying myeloma. This is something we discussed at our last session, so we're not going to go into details of this. There are, however, certain supportive care measures like bone strengthening agents and drugs like erythropoietin, which are recommended and will help you tolerate your treatment better and will help alleviate some of these symptoms as well. The symptoms discussed thus far are most likely related to the disease itself, and as I've previously mentioned, treating the underlying myeloma helps with a lot of these. Patients with myeloma, however, stay on medications for myeloma for prolonged periods of time, and because of this, they can experience symptoms which are related to the treatment itself. And the majority of these symptoms include fatigue, neuropathy, loss of taste, inability to sleep. And again, we've addressed some of these issues in our last session, and so we're not going to spend too much of time dealing with this. What I would like to do today is focus on coping strategies to deal with some of the issues relevant to both the patient and the caregiver. I'm not going to separate out the patient and the caregiver because in my mind, the caregiver is going through this whole process as much as the patient is doing it as well. And it is critically important that for both patient and for the caregiver that it's not just treating the body, but it is important to treat the mind. It is very important to tend to your spirit as it is important to feeding your body. So participate in activities that make you feel good, make you feel alive and happy. Read books that inspire you. Try new things. Try things like yoga. Try things like meditation. Try and develop a hobby when you're going through an illness like myeloma. Bring music and art into your environment and write about your experience. And it's critically important to maintain your social network while all of this is going on. One way of doing this is by communicating and expressing yourself. Honest, clear communication with friends, family, and your healthcare providers, which all are a team, or your team of taking care of your myeloma, is vital to your mental and physical well-being. Your relationships over the course of your disease are going to change, and because of these, every relationship takes on a different dimension. It's important to accept that situation and change along the way. I always try and tell most people, take things one day at a time, and sometimes take things 1 hour at a time. Keep a daily log so that you can be your own best advocate with your healthcare team. You can keep them informed, and this will help them take better care of you as well. Always set goals and priorities according to your energy levels and abilities for that day. Tomorrow may be very different, but today is what it is. Always allow yourself to rest when needed and give yourself permission to leave things unfinished. I always find we set kind of unrealistic goals, and because of that, one tends to get disappointed. So allow yourself to not complete things. It's okay not to be finished with something on the first day that you plan doing it. Another very important part of taking care of your myeloma is having a good attitude towards your disease. Humor is good for the spirit and the body, especially the immune system. Humor keeps things in perspective and helps to maintain a positive attitude. Having a loving and supporting relationship can provide much healing power for a person dealing with a chronic illness like myeloma. Encourage your support team to take care of their needs also. So it's not just about you coming to your clinic visits, your caregiver coming to your appointments all the time. There may be times when they need to take time off and they need time to refuel. And it's okay to take that time off. Again, very important for your body. Eating a healthy diet is essential. For myeloma, you know, I always tell all of my patients, drink lots of water. It's good for your kidneys. It's good for your body in general. Exercise is very important. We talked a little bit about bone pain related to myeloma. We talked about fatigue related to myeloma. Exercise is a good way of keeping your body on track. It releases endorphins that improve not only your body, but basically your emotional state as well. And it, in fact, acts as a natural pain reliever. It relieves stress, it relieves depression, and can help you cope with anxiety as well. Again, make sure you have realistic expectations. Start slow. Don't push yourself. Listen to your body. Do not overdo it. You are the captain of your body, and you can decide exactly what you can do on a specific day. Again, one very important part, which I always tell both patients and caregivers, is understand your disease. Understand your lab values and understand your treatments. Understand all the options that you have available to you. And to do that, you have to ask questions. Learn all you can about your myeloma. Ask lots of questions of your healthcare team and keep asking if you don't understand completely, because that's the only way where you are going to be able to actually control what happens with your disease. And again, as I said, you are the best advocate for your disease. One very important way of dealing with myeloma, which I've found in my practice, is participating in support groups. If you have one close to home, it's always nice to be a part of it. Even listening to other people dealing with myeloma helps deal with your own cancer. So I do find that dealing with or participating in support groups has been immensely helpful to some of our patients. With this, I've not necessarily addressed specifics of myeloma, but I'm looking forward to what Dr. Palos and Rick have to say, and hopefully we'll have a more interactive discussion towards the end of our presentations. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ajay, for just a wonderful, very embracing conversation and covering these wonderful topics in such a caring way. And I know that there'll be comments, and perhaps we'll have tips to share during the Q&A, so thank you so much. Our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos. And Dr. Palos is actually her own interdisciplinary team to some extent. She's both a nurse and a social worker and a doctor of public health. And she's a clinical research manager at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, Division of Medical Affairs, Department of Cancer Survivorship. And Dr. Palos is going to address taking on the role of caregiving, coping with each day on special occasions and birthdays, managing family and friends, and long-distance caregiving. Dr. Palos?
Thank you, and good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with all of you for this important discussion of coping with the stress of caregiving when your loved one has multiple myeloma. Dr. Rajay just gave us an excellent overview of the specific needs and some wonderful tips of how you can cope with being a caregiver and the role in decision-making of a caregiver. She also gave us an understanding of the complex challenges that a patient and caregiver face when they are going through the experience of multiple myeloma. Now, many of you participating on this call understand what that diagnosis means. It's living with multiple myeloma is a journey that involves the patient, of course, their caregivers, and their families. And the path of this journey leads to multiple complex and yet many times rewarding challenges for both the patient and their caregivers and their families. They're caregivers. We keep hearing that phrase over and over. But there's still quite a bit of confusion linked to this word. Questions arise as to what is the role of a caregiver, how does a caregiver cope with the day-to-day activities, and equally important, how do they cope with caregiving during special occasions like birthdays or holidays, and what happens when there is even geographic distances between a caregiver and their loved ones. So in the next few moments, I hope to address these questions and briefly discuss the role and how it can change, the role of the caregiver and how it can change during the journey of the multiple myeloma. So for a second here, I'd like for you, I can't see you, but just kind of close your eyes for a moment, and I want you to think of a caregiver. Who is your caregiver? And if you're doing that now, you have someone pictured in your mind, and I'm just curious, you know, it could be, who came to your mind? Was it a spouse? Was it a child, a special friend? Or was it a caregiver from the hospital, such as your health care provider? That is where some of the confusion comes in, and just in the term of how caregiver is used. So I'm going to use a very simple definition today, and it's a caregiver is any person who helps a loved one during their illness. So this definition may be simple, but being a caregiver can be complex, it's multidimensional, it can be exhausting, and again, at times extremely rewarding. The role of a caregiver will vary from day to day and at times from hour to hour. So many of you listening to this teleconference understand what I'm saying. If I were to ask you, what is your role as a caregiver, your responses would vary. Some of you would say, I keep track of all the medications that my loved one is taking. Others would say, oh, I'm the driver. I take that person to the appointments all the time. And some of you would say, I cook, I help with the children, I walk the doggies. And others would say, I just spend time with my loved one, just visiting, talking, listening, or praying. There's no doubt that being a caregiver can be challenging and rewarding. The most common challenges caregivers have said to me that they face during special occasions are, one is how to say no to the old roles that they may have had in the past, how to say no to the new roles that may arise. They generally will feel guilty about saying no, and then also they're hesitant about being to ask for help or time off from the traditional role. And then another challenge, which you've already heard quite a bit about, is the changes that can occur in the caregiver's physical and emotional health as they try to cope not just with the roles of being the caregiver, but now as they try to prepare for that special occasion. So we heard a little bit about how caregivers and, of course, patients may have an increase in fatigue, a decrease in sleep. They can experience great sadness or a feeling of loss for the old times. And Dr. Reja gave some excellent simple techniques for self-care, and my colleague Rick will share some tips for managing stress and other similar feelings in a moment. Now, if I were to ask you what is your role during special times such as a birthday, again, your answers would vary. Some of you would say, oh, in my family, it's my job to do all the decorating for the parties. Others of you would say, everyone knows I do all the baking. So when multiple myeloma enters into your life, these roles may change. And so your answer to the question, what is your role, is going to change also. Some of you may even say, how can I even think of celebrating, baking, or anything like that during these times? And yet others of you may think, oh, how can I make this occasion even more special since we are going through these times? So these types of feelings are perfectly normal. It's also a perfect time for exploring new opportunities and discoveries. So it's a good time to discover new roles, strengths, and resources for your family, friends, and partners. This is a perfect opportunity to speak with your circle of support about establishing new traditions to celebrate these occasions. It's also a good time to talk about trading off some of those traditional roles that you may have had in the past. So I'm sure many of you may have some excellent ideas of how you've had to deal with some of these situations, and hopefully you'll be able to share one of those. One point to remember is that it's important to have strong communication. Agreement and decisions among the family members need to be made about what will be the best plan without placing so much strain on the patient or the caregiver. It's also important to communicate with your healthcare providers. Let them know when there's a special event coming up. Your healthcare team may have some ideas that may help you during these times. It's also important to remember to be flexible on your role and responsibilities and enjoy the moments. So trying to maintain so many roles can be challenging for a caregiver who may live with the patient or live close enough to see their loved ones on a daily basis. But what happens when there's a large geographic distance between a patient and their caregiver? Are the roles the same? How can a caregiver care for a patient who lives in another city? As one caregiver said to me, that can't be done. How can you be a caregiver if you don't live with the person you're supposed to be caring for? Well, that sounds logical, but we know that there are an increasing number of caregivers that are providing help across the miles. There's no doubt that distance poses a barrier to caregiving, but there is growing evidence that even those who are a long-distance caregiver provide essential support. For example, long-distance caregivers provide advice, financial support, help with decision-making, and are critical in providing help during a crisis. This can be very rewarding experiences for a caregiver. Being a long-distance caregiver can also be challenging. Oftentimes, there may be feelings of frustration or guilt. For instance, there may be thoughts, oops, I'm not doing enough. Perhaps there's fear and uncertainty about the changes in their loved one's physical and emotional health. And so the combination of these thoughts may contribute to the stress and distress of the long-distance caregiver. So now that we recognize those circumstances, what can we do to be proactive long-distance caregivers? I'll share just a quick few strategies that may be helpful to you. The first one is determine the roles of the family member or friend who wishes to be part of the team that may live and who may live close to your loved one. Find out who's willing to help and who can do what and when they can help. So, and with that group, you can also set up a safety net, people that can come by and monitor your loved one's condition. And as one caregiver said to me, let them be your eyes and ears. Be kind to yourself. Determine what realistically can be done. Maintain close communication with your loved one's providers and helpers. You can schedule a regular time to call and talk to them. Keep a logbook where you record your conversations with other caregivers, providers, or even the insurers. That will help keep track of who you spoke to, when, and what the outcome. One of the things that I thought was a really simple but very good tip is keep a list of the helpful numbers handy and make a list for anyone and everyone who's involved in the care of your loved one. And it's important to keep copies for yourself when you're doing that. So in addition to help with your worry, I mean, these are pretty concrete, but some other things that you can do now that we're into this new technological area is set up a web camera so you can actually see your loved one and talk to them. Skype is an awesome way to keep in touch with a loved one across the miles, and regular communication where you really get to see someone can give you peace of mind. You can prepare your own video clips of past holidays, so even if you're not there physically, you're there in spirit. You can create new traditions, and so if you can't be there in person, start some new traditions, and that should help you and your loved one and your family. And the most important that we've been talking about all along today is keep tabs on your own physical and mental health. And you'll get additional tips in just a moment. My colleagues and I look forward to hearing from you and the suggestions you may have for caregivers and those they care for, whether in close proximity or across the miles. Thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. And, Carolyn, this concludes my remarks.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Talos, for just a wonderful presentation and a lot of really very important tips and helpful suggestions to everybody in all of these different special occasions and long-distance caregiving. And so thank you so much. And I know we'll have suggestions from the audience as well during the second part of the program. Thank you. And our next speaker is Rick Dickens, and Rick is an oncology social worker at Cancer Care. He's a clinical social work supervisor. He's also blood cancer's program coordinator at Cancer Care. And Rick is going to address practical self-care tips for managing stress, the importance of a support network, the free support services that you can access from Cancer Care, and he'll say a bit more about our Cancer Care door-to-door program. Rick?
Thank you, Carolyn. It is a pleasure to be on this important program with Drs. Rajay and Palos. I could already see that we're providing a real holistic presentation for you about the many myriad issues that caregiving encompasses and how to address those issues. I've been asked to address practical techniques to manage stress and to talk about the importance of a support network. And I'd like to start with my favorite definition of stress. It goes like this. A normal physiological response of the body to situations or stimulus which are perceived as dangerous to the body. Stress can affect anyone and everyone at some point of time in their life. When it occurs frequently, it affects health, both physical and mental. And this is from stressfocus.com. And I just want to take a moment to reflect back. It's important to highlight from that quote, stress is one, a normal response. Two, it can affect anyone. And three, it affects both physical and mental health. Caregivers are put in a demanding role, often requiring sacrificing their needs for the needs of another. The best way, however, to do this is by providing care for the caregiver and the cared for. And to do that, one must find balance. Our bodies respond to stress by rapidly giving us extra energy to address the stressor. This response is triggered by the fight or flight syndrome we are all hardwired with. After the stress passes, our bodies return to normal. The problem with chronic stress is our bodies stay in the heightened state of awareness, thereby putting additional stress on our well-being. In our normal state, our bodies and minds are in balance, but in chronic stress puts them out of balance for extended periods of time. Everyone develops techniques to calm the body and mind, even though we don't always identify them as techniques. Examples, and some of which were already cited, prayer, walks in nature, a good book, pets, your favorite music, laughing with family, and exercise. But to implement these techniques when you need them, you have to cultivate awareness. And then you have to carve out the time necessary to bring yourself back to balance. There are many centuries-old practices that can also help. Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, visualization, meditation, and Reiki, among others. But all of these, in fact, all of life, is sustained by the same repetitive action, breathing. While only 20% of each breath is oxygen, that is essentially our life force. During crisis, we take shallow breaths to maximize that life force, but being in a state of chronic crisis deprives our bodies of the oxygen we need to survive and that we rely on to provide control over our mental and physical health. I'd like to teach you a simple three-breath exercise I do with many of my patients and caregivers. And it's hard to do on the phone, and many of you are holding the phone cradle to your head. So keep in mind that after this teleconference, I invite you to sit down comfortably with one hand on your chest and the other hand over your lower abdomen with your thumb on your navel. Eyes opened or eyes closed, breathe in and out several times and observe which hand is moving more. For many, especially those who are stressed, it is the hand on the chest. Then do the exercise again, but this time try to breathe using your diaphragm, a muscle between your lungs and gastric organs. The goal is to breathe deeply, filling up your whole lungs, so the hand over your abdomen comes up and down more than the one on your chest. In this exercise, you take in a deep breath, hold it for a few counts, and then blow it out, making noise. Do this. In, hold, and out. Three times, and then sit for a few moments quietly. And that's very important, to stop and sit quietly after doing that. For most people, there is a calming feeling that can last a few minutes or much longer. You can also continue this exercise for more than three breaths, which guides you into a type of meditation called mindfulness. The good thing about this technique is you can do it anywhere, anytime, especially when you feel stressed. Our bodies innately know the importance of oxygen. When we laugh, sob, sigh, or yawn, we release emotions of joy, sorrow, tension, or fatigue, which in turn makes us take in deep diaphragmatic breaths. This is the mind-body connection. But the emotional stress of caregiving over time can deprive our bodies of much needed oxygen to stay well. The goal in stress reduction, especially in chronically stressful situations, is to create an island of peace. Islands come in all sizes, so your peace can be a long respite or a brief reprieve. I'm fascinated by the emphasis on peace across cultures. I've always been fascinated by it. Shalom Aleichem in Hebrew and Assalam Aleichem in Arabic confer a holy peace on greeting. Shanti, peace in Sanskrit, is often chanted next to Om to bring balance and peace. In Buddhism, peace speaks of equanimity, also part of the Four Noble Truths. And in Christian scripture, it's written, the peace that passeth all understanding. Not removed from, but aware, in the presence of. Caregivers need to create islands of peace to sustain and nourish yourselves so that you can be replenished and continue to care for your loved ones. The awful truth is, if you don't take time to care for yourself, you could end up with two sick people who need help, putting more stress on the support network. Other techniques to relieve stress can include visualizations, which can be as simple as daydreaming about islands of peace or other calm, safe places of rest and healing. Humming and singing are also wonderful stress techniques that bring the body in balance through vibration. Breath and stress techniques are helpful ways to carve out time to care for yourself, but it is equally important to build a support network from your family and friends, community center, house of worship, or place of employment. For patients and caregivers, one of the hardest things to say is, I need help. But for people who care about you, helping is one thing they can give. That is why with a chronic illness, building a support network is so important. And by reaching out to as many people as possible, you help the caregivers to spread the help and thereby help themselves. Years ago, I heard the saying, the gift of giving. It was attributed to Mother Teresa, but I have witnessed this philosophy across time and cultures. It simply implies that to be a caring person, to know the joy of sacrifice and the pride of accepting responsibility, someone must humbly say, I need. For many, it is preferable to be the giver, but by reaching out to others and say, I need help, you are also giving them the gift of giving of themselves. Among families and communities, this is a central theme of maturing, growing up, and contributing. Accepting stress as normal while taking care of loved ones can go a long way toward nurturing your body and spirit, but stressors can also elicit feelings of sadness and frustration. This is when it is helpful to seek help of a social worker or other professionals from organizations such as Cancer Care. Cancer Care is oncology social workers who inform people of resources and strategies for finding help. This might include education on improving communication with your healthcare team, or creative ideas to keep your social networks informed through phone trees and use of other technologies, or mind-body-spirit techniques to help calm the mind and relax the body. Along with education and resources, Cancer Care provides financial assistance. And as Carolyn mentioned, for multiple myeloma patients, we have a special fund called the Door-to-Door Grant that helps with transportation to treatment and appointments. We also provide telephone counseling with professional social workers, regional face-to-face groups, and national telephone and online groups for patients and loved ones. Groups provide role models, emotional support, coping strategies, and validation that you're not alone. To many, social networks, building relationships with your healthcare team, and support groups go a long way in helping to confront the difficult challenge of cancer. But daunting as they are, with help, they are never impossible. And you can call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE and speak to a social worker to explore how we can help. It's been a pleasure talking to all of you today, and I look forward to the question and answer with Dr. Palos and Rajay. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, for such a wonderful presentation and really for such wonderful tips and ideas for people to think about in terms of really coping with some of the stresses of in terms of self-care as well. Just wonderful ideas. Well, now we do have a second half of the program, which historically has always been a time when people could ask questions, and you certainly may ask questions if you wish to. But because of the topic today on caregiving, we also, all of us, recognize that you all have expertise as well as caregivers, and so we'd like you to join with our faculty team. I'm going to ask actually Mary to bring all of our speakers on board today for the second half of the program, so all the speakers' lines will be open. But also, we would invite you very much to share a quick tip if there's something that has worked for you in coping with the stresses of caregiving. We would very much invite you to share a quick tip that it may work for you, and it may also help somebody else. So with that in mind, I'm going to ask Mary to explain to you how to queue up to either share a quick tip or ask a question. Mary?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to share a quick tip or ask a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question or quick tip comes from Robert L.
Hi, this is his wife, Nanette, and many times we've listened to your classes and really appreciated these conference calls. However, I've noticed that on many occasions you talk about the stress, and one of the stresses that many of us are challenged by is continuing to pay our normal everyday bills, and there are ways that we can get help doing that by contacting our utility companies, our telephone company, and contacting 211, the United Way, in order to get the help that we need with feeding our families and continuing to pay our bills. And those people will help us minimize the expense of so many of the things that we're challenged in. Just pain and that stress alone, relieving some of that helps the patient and their caregiver. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Nanette. You really do bring up such an important area, that many people on the call today and many people who contact Cancer Care, we all work with, the whole world is so stretched with these all these different bills. And so I think you've identified some really wonderful resources for everybody on the call. I also would encourage anyone on the call who is having any issues around just the day-to-day life expenses, so go ahead and contact our social work staff here at Cancer Care as well, because we may have suggestions in addition specific to your particular situation, and also to work with your healthcare team. And I'm going to open this up to our other speakers if they want to add anything to what I've said. But and Nanette, you really, though, have really, I have to say, this is such an important point that you've brought up.
So I'd just like to add to that, Carolyn. Annette, you brought a very important point up, specifically for myeloma, where we completely understand that we're dealing with medicines which, folks are taking for prolonged periods of time, which are expensive. So in addition to all of the resources you've mentioned, Annette, check in with your healthcare team, because we do know how much it costs for drugs like Revlimid when you're on it for months and months together. But there are programs such as the Chronic Disease Fund, which will help people with their co-payments for drugs which are as expensive as the ones we deal with in myeloma. So certainly make, in addition to all of those resources, make your healthcare team a part of this as well, because there are ways in which we can help you with some of those payments.
And I would just like to add also that sometimes talking about money is a very sensitive topic for families or for people. And these types of situations, when you have the chronic disease and you have the cost of the medications and everything else, it's important to get some help. And it's not a sign of weakness, and it's not a sign that, that you can't do the things the way you used to. It's that things just are very expensive, and everyone needs help in this. So it's like I think Rick said it very beautifully when he said, sometimes we have to humbly say, I need help, and then, finish it with my financial, situation.
And this is Rick. And Nanette, as a social worker, I want to thank you very much for bringing that up, because overwhelmingly, all of our calls struggle with that. In fact, since the Great Recession, I've heard, and I've been doing this for over a decade, I've suddenly heard the term the insured poor. Now, there aren't a lot of resources. It is part of the healthcare debate and the struggle, but there are a lot of possible resources that can be pieced together, as you so eloquently stated. Cancer Care, to build on what Carolyn said, this is what we do as social workers. And part of it also, to just reiterate what Dr. Roger said, is that the healthcare team is not only your healthcare medical team, but the healthcare team is your billing people. and the social worker and the physical therapist and people like that. But a lot of people don't know that they can go and talk to the billing department. They sometimes can negotiate bills for costs related to treatment. But as you mentioned, Nanette, there's a lot of other costs in chronic illnesses, and there are a lot of resources. And at Cancer Care, we try to help people identify those potential resources, many of which you've already identified. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank all of our speakers, and thank Nanette, really, for identifying this as a really major stressor and, indeed, as a an area where help is available, and that I think that sometimes there is the expectation that maybe the healthcare team won't have compassion around that issue, and I think what you're hearing all of us say is that they do, because they really, they recognize, as Dr. Rajay said, the costs of these medications are quite costly, and you also have all your other day-to-day living expenses to deal with, so that any kind of help that we can all get you, and there is a lot of different buckets to pick from to get you help from a lot of different places, that can make a big difference in your day-to-day living. So please, and I think it's true that that money is a, often it's a very hard thing to say, I need some help with this. But, you know, actually we're living at a time, I think as Rick said, that there really are that many, many of people require help with money matters, with money issues. And so this is an area that we encourage you to really seek help from all of us with, and we're here to help you. Thank you. Our next question.
Thank you. Jack A., your line is open.
One of the speakers recommended support groups, which I heartily endorse. And then Rick mentioned about the door-to-door service for appointments and treatments. Will door-to-door service also cover somebody who wants to both go to and return from a support group meeting?
Good question, Jack. My understanding is officially it does not. It would be worth a call, and I would encourage people to call Cancer Care. That is something that would have to be run by our director of the grants, who works with the funders in terms of what we can offer. I know we have numerous grants for all cancers. This is one of our more generous grants, specifically recognizing the chronic nature of multiple myeloma. And our funders have been pretty liberal in how we are able to give that out. It is primarily related to treatment. But that is something I couldn't give you a definitive answer on, but I would encourage anyone with those questions or others related to transportation expenses, feel free to give us a call at Cancer Care, and we would do our best to get as much of that covered as possible within the framework of this grant guidelines.
You know, this is a really such an excellent question, because indeed, for many of you who live in very in areas that are quite rural, or there's quite a distance to get to where you have to go, or need transportation help to get to that support group, that is a fair question to call our staff and ask for help with that. I also want to add that at Cancer Care we also offer groups that are on the telephone or online as well, and those groups, so sometimes people actually prefer those groups just because, not just because of the travel issues, but really because they might not be, there is a travel issue in terms of just getting from one place to the other and the time it takes and the cost involved. So that's another option. But I would definitely call our staff here, 1-800-813-HOPE, and ask about that need that you have. And our staff are very creative in finding solutions to problems, and it sounds like you really would like to be able to get to that support group, so that's really important for us.
And
to
one other thing, Carolyn, this is Rick, and I would just like to say to Jack, I myself have run about 5 or 6 multiple myeloma telephone support groups over the years. I don't think we have one going on right now, and we often have blood cancer groups going online. But it has been a very, very informative, engaging population, and they run just like face-to-face groups. It's a toll-free number. They do run for 12 sessions with the same group of people, so you do get to connect and meet each other. So for people in rural areas or who are dealing with a lot of mobility issues, do call Cancer Care. And when we do get enough people definitely seeking a service, we put together those groups to try to address those needs.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. So thank you for that question, and do call us at the end of the call. And our next question, Mary?
Thank you. Patricia W., your line is open.
Oh, hi. I didn't expect to get taken. I'm calling in reference to the gentleman who wanted to know if, you know, he could get taken to meetings. I live in New York City, and we have what is called a CESA ride. And I know in different states, I was in Colorado, they have something similar, and I understand Florida has it. They're called different things. But these companies, when you register with them, will take you wherever you want to go. It doesn't only have to be for medical. So, you know, I don't know where the gentleman lived, but a lot of people hesitate to get involved with these things, but I have used it personally, and it is a godsend, because with multiple myeloma in the beginning, I was literally going to medicals and all kinds of things 4 and 5 times a week. You just can't get people to take you every day to these things. So, you know, I don't know if that helps, but accessoride is a very big thing here in New York City.
Well, you actually raise a very good point that in many different areas of the country, there are a lot of other situations where getting transportation helps, so that indeed you could raise it with, if you're in a group and need transportation to it, you could raise it with a group leader. If you're going to a group at a hospital, some hospitals actually have, you know, funds they set aside to help with transportation. Transportation is the largest request, actually, for service that many of us, you know, people ask for, and most social work departments or hospitals will put aside some funds to help with that. But there also are these specialized programs, you're quite right. Patricia, thanks for raising that, that actually do provide, you know, additional transportation. Also, sometimes people in a group will carpool to a meeting or will kind of be quite creative in finding ways to get to the group. So there are many different ways of solutions. I know sometimes we've had people who are members of a particular faith, a church group or a synagogue, and the members of that group will actually sometimes provide that transportation, or they live in a community where somebody does, where there's car transportation, where people will take people to different places. So again, it is good to talk this out with somebody so that you can actually figure out the full range of possibilities that might be available to you.
It's a very good question. Caroline, if I could jump, I'm sorry, was somebody else going to speak? No. If I could jump in, Patricia, thanks for raising that. You could definitely call Cancer Care regarding that. There are those services around the country. Even the American Cancer Society in some areas does provide that. But to let everybody know, and Dr. Roget made a reference to this, the healthcare team, whether you're being, if you're being treated in a hospital, most hospitals still have social service departments. And social service, social workers are dealing with those sort of issues on a day-to-day basis with a lot of the people getting treated there. So that's your best resource sometimes. Even if you don't know your social worker, the next time you go in for a treatment, call, ask to speak to the social service department, set up a meeting, and they would be able to actually tell you if it exists, how do other people do this, and guide you in terms of how do you apply for something like that.
And the other thing is that sometimes you have case managers, you have the different case, actually patient navigators, or a number of different people in different roles in the hospital who may be able to help with that as well. So a lot of options. We're a creative group today, so thank you. Excellent. Our next comment or question.
Susan M., your line is open.
Yes, I have a comment on the financial support end. My husband has had myeloma for 6 years, and we recently had to change from our normal insurance to a Medicare and a secondary insurance, which was quite difficult on its own. However, our oncologist said to David, she said, "Aren't you a veteran?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And we found that by going, if you are a veteran, you've served in the military, that you're entitled to complete care from the Veterans Association through the military service. So for someone out there, we had never given it a thought, and the secondary insurance can be quite expensive. You will automatically get your Medicare, but through the VA, through the Veterans you can get complete care for myeloma. We found that our local, which is around 50 miles, which is a little difficult sometimes, but we do have some locals where he can get his blood work done, have given excellent care. So for those who've never given it a thought, which we had not, you might want to pass this on and to give it some thought. They do complete care. All your medication is just automatically yours. No copay, no nothing. They take care of you and do a wonderful job. I'd just like to pass that along to those that might be eligible. Thank you.
Patricia, you're a wonderful, this is a fabulous audience, I must say. You're all terrific, and that is really a fantastic recommendation. Many people are not, don't think about that, and I think once you become aware of that, if you're a veteran of military service in the United States, you actually are able to access veteran benefits, and those are quite extensive, and it is true that many people don't think about that, and you're raising it. I hope there may be many people on the call who may be thinking, you know, I never thought about that. I hadn't realized that. And I think that it's something to really be aware of because it is a huge array of benefits. And, indeed, there are other things like that that sometimes one just doesn't think about for oneself. Don't think, oh, I could get that. And so just an excellent point, really. Thank you for really raising that, Susan. Very helpful to everybody on the call. Any of our other speakers want to comment on that?
I think it's important to note that with our callers' information, Dr. Rajay and Rick, that there are a lot of different resources out there, and that's why it's so important to be asking questions and getting help, because as you see, it was all different types of sources for the financial help and different types of healthcare providers that can help. So that's important to remember. We need to ask to get the information.
I completely agree with this. You know, I'm learning, as I said earlier on, I started out that I'm going to learn through this teleconference. So the things which some of you have mentioned, you know, we kind of know them in the back of your minds, but you don't really think that you can access them, like the VA healthcare, which is kind of free for our patients. So that's and, you know, it's nice to talk about these things because that's how we then can access them.
And this is Rick, and I'm going to say also, as has been discussed today, groups are a wonderful environment for people who do feel compelled and respond well in groups, but a great environment for sharing these techniques, this information, these resources, especially when they're cancer-specific. So I would encourage people, if you can, get into a groups. And if it's a multiple myeloma group, you're going to be talking to experts who are already dealing with a lot of the same things you are, and some have found solutions.
And, you know, actually, that's a very, very good point. You know, here we are, all these people on the call, and we're learning so much from each other. And there's something about a voice asking a question, and I think I also always come back to your healthcare team because they really are such a critically important group to talk to, but it's just, look what's happening, all this information. Mary, our next comment or question?
Susan M., your line is open.
Yes, I had just called in about the VA benefits. I also wanted to add it, and I felt like I was getting a little bit too long, but also multiple myeloma is considered a presumptive disease from people who have served in Vietnam. So they are considering it as an Agent Orange disease. It's a presumptive disease, but it also comes with complete and full benefits. So a person who has served in Vietnam and has the multiple myeloma, they would be entitled to an additional a living expense. In our case, it comes to over $3,000 a month. So that also is very, very important to put out there. You are graded according to your disability, of course, as far as your myeloma goes. But it is a presumptive disease, and it does come with benefits through the VA. Thank you.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. Wow. This is an amazing call. I believe there's another comment, is there?
We do have a question or comment from Robert L.
Hi, this is Nanette again.
Oh, Nanette, hi.
Another thing that I forgot to mention in my all of the research that I've been doing over the last 9 months is that also check on the drugs that you're taking. Many of the drug companies out there do have ways to either discount or help you with the cost of your drugs and your co-pays on those drugs. And like you were talking about Revlimid, they have a program called RevAssist because my husband's on Revlimid. And because of our financial situation, where I was caught unemployed and having lost unemployment at the same time this all happened, and he became unemployed because of it, they are completely helping us with the cost of that drug. They have very short applications, and all of these people are out there to help you look into Lifeline when you talk about your utility. I hope that the information that I've brought to your attention helps other people as it has helped me.
Well,
thank you guys for helping us with your door-to-door program. It has been phenomenal and helped us in so many ways. We are so grateful for all the help that we get from Cancer Care.
Well, thank you very much, Nanette, and thank you for also your suggestions and comments. It's so helpful, and so it's really incredibly helpful to your suggestions and comments. I want to thank actually all of our speakers today. You've been phenomenal, and I also want to thank all of you on the call today who really have had such wonderful suggestions and such wonderful, just wonderful thoughts for everybody on the call today to be helpful. I mean, those quick tips from all of you. I mean, I have to say this has been an extraordinary call. And I want to thank all of you. And I also want to remind everybody that this is a one-hour program and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. With that in mind, I want to actually remind all of you of all the services that you can access from Cancer Care, which Rick had gone over with you. But we have a staff of 50 master's-level trained oncology social workers, and we're really here to help you with practical and financial concerns, with coping and counseling concerns, with support groups, with workshops and materials and fact sheets. So do take advantage of these services, and you can call us at 1-800-813-HOPE. And most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone. I want you to know that you're part of a community of support and that we're here to help you. Thank you all for participating, and I want to wish you all a very fine day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect and have a wonderful day.